Threat and From A Science of Human Nature, by John Stuart Mill. About the author. John Stuart Mill was entirely homeschooled by his father, and was subjected to a remarkable education. His autobiography is recommended reading in large part, because it shows the dangers of an intensely intellectual education, which neglects the emotional aspects of life. His father secured for him a position in the East India Company, which provided him the opportunity for continuing the utilitarian tradition begun by Jeremy Bentham. He spent his life advancing a logical and scientific approach to social and political problems. His utilitarianism is generally considered the foundational statement in the nature of happiness for the individual and society. Partly as a result of reading Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America and partly from his discussions with Harriet Taylor, Mill feared the conformist attitude of the middle working class threatened individual freedoms and authored in Liberty, which remains a classic statement today. In his The Subjection of Women, Mill argues for equality of freedom of the sexes, in spite of the 19th century's widespread bias that women were of a different nature than men. About the work. In our selection from A System of Logic, his first significant book, Mill argues that a science of human nature is no different from any other kind of exact science. In astronomy, the movement of the planets can be predicted with certainty, because the laws of motions and the antecedent circumstances can be, he thinks, known with certainty. The rise and fall of the tides, on the other hand, can only be imprecisely known, because local antecedent conditions cannot be known or measured exactly. The study of human nature is similar to teleology, because of the complexity of the factors in human action. Nevertheless, Mill argues that in principle, both teleology and human nature can become exact sciences. The Reading Selection from A System of Logic. Human nature as a subject of science. It is a common notion, or at least it is implied, in many common modes of speech, that the thoughts, feelings, and actions of sentient beings are not a subject of science, in the same strict sense in which this is true of the objects of outward nature. This notion seems to involve some confusion of ideas, which it is necessary to begin by clearing up. Any facts are fitted in themselves to be a subject of science, which follow one another according to constant laws, although those laws may not have been discovered, nor even be discoverable by our existing resources. It may happen that the greater causes, those on which the principal part of the phenomena depends, are within the reach of observation and measurement, so that if no other causes intervened, a complete explanation could be given not only of the phenomenon in general, but of all the variations and modifications which it admits of. But inasmuch as other, perhaps many other causes, separately insignificant in their effects, cooperate or conflict, in many or in all cases, with those greater causes, the effect accordingly presents more or less of aberration from what would be produced by the greater causes alone. Now if these minor causes are not so constantly accessible, or not accessible at all, to accurate observation, the principal mass of the effect may still, as before, be accounted for, and even predicted, but there will be variations and modifications, which we shall not be competent to explain thoroughly, and our predictions will not be fulfilled accurately, but only approximately. The theory of the tides. It is this with the theory of the tides. The circumstances of a local or causal nature, such as the configuration of the bottom of the ocean, the degree of confinement from shores, the direction of the wind, ampersand sea, influence in many or in all places the height and time of the tide, and a portion of these circumstances, being either not accurately knowable, not precisely measurable, or not capable of being certainly foreseen, the tide in known places commonly varies from the calculated result of general principles by some difference that we cannot explain, and in unknown ones may vary from it by a difference that we are not able to foresee or conjecture. Astronomy was once a science without being an exact science. It could not become exact until not only the general course of the planetary motions, but the perturbations also were accounted for and referred to their causes. It has become an exact science because its phenomena have been brought under laws comprehending the whole of the causes by which the phenomena are influenced. Teleology, therefore, is not yet an exact science, not from any inherent incapacity of being so, but from the difficulty of ascertaining, with complete precision, the real derivative uniformities. Aspects of a science of human nature. The science of human nature is of this description. It falls far short of the standard of exactness now realized in astronomy, but there is no reason that it should not be as much a science of teleology is, or as astronomy was when its calculations had only mastered the main phenomena, but not the perturbations. The phenomena with which the science is conversant being the thoughts, feelings, and actions of human beings, it would have attained the ideal perfection of a science if it enabled us to foretell how an individual would think, feel, or act through life with the same certainty with which astronomy enables us to predict the places and the occultations of the heavenly bodies. It needs scarcely be stated that nothing approaching to this can be done. The actions of individuals could not be predicted with scientific accuracy, were it only because we cannot foresee the whole of the circumstances in which those individuals will be placed. But further, even in any given combination of preset circumstances, no assertion which is both precise and universally true can be made respecting the manner in which human beings will think, feel, or act. This is not, however, because a very person's modes of thinking, feeling, and acting do not depend on causes, nor can we doubt that if, in the case of any individual, our data could be complete, we even now know enough of the ultimate laws by which mental phenomena are determined to enable us, in many cases, to predict with tolerable certainty what in the greater number of supposable combinations of circumstances his conduct or sentiments would be. But the impressions and actions of human beings are not solely the result of their present circumstances, but the joint result of those circumstances and of the characters of the individuals and the agencies which determine human character are so numerous and diversified. Nothing which has happened to the person throughout life being without its portion of influence, that in the aggregate they are never, in any two cases, exactly similar. Hence, even if our science of human nature were theoretically perfect, that is, if we could calculate any character as we can calculate the orbit of any planet from given data, still as the data are never all given, nor ever precisely alike in different cases, we could neither make positive predictions nor lay down universal propositions. Inasmuch, however, as many of those effects which it is of most importance to render amenable to human foresight and control are determined like the tides, in an incomparably greater degree, by general causes, it is evidently possible, with regard to all such effects, to make predictions which will almost always be verified, and general proposition which are almost always true. And whenever it is sufficient to know how the great majority of the human race, or of some nation, or class of persons, will think, act, feel, and act, these propositions are equivalent to universal ones. For the purposes of political and social science, this is sufficient. An approximate generalization is, in social inquiries, for most practical purposes equivalent to an exact one, that which is only probable when asserted of individual human beings, indiscriminately selected, being certain when affirmed of the character and collective conduct of masses. The science of human nature. The science of human nature may be said to exist in proportion as the approximate truths which compose a practical knowledge of mankind can be exhibited as corollaries from the universal laws of human nature on which they rest, whereby the proper limits of those approximate truths would be shown, and we should be enabled to deduce others for any new state of circumstances in anticipation of specific experience. This completes the reading of A Science of Human Nature by John Stuart Mill under the new free documentation license. This file in this and other formats is available on the internet at philosophy.lander.edu.